Hello, and welcome to Misspoken, a lady-centric live-lit show featuring writers, performers, comedians, essayists, and bloggers, exploring a new theme each month. More information can be found at miss-spoken.com. The following is a recording of our show from October 25th, 2017 at the Gallery Cabaret. That month's theme was Confessions.
Hi, hello, hi, we're starting the show. It's starting now.
Hello.
It's all happening.
Yes.
It's all happening right
all
now.
Happening.
The
right
sounds.
Here, right very
yeah, we're just, we'll just keep talking.
Yep.
Cool.
Okay.
Hi. Hello. You all seem relatively silent. Okay. Is the mic on? Can you hear us?
Yay.
Okay, cool. I heard a yell in the back and then I got paranoid. I was like, oh no. I've been talking into the abyss. This is terrible. Wait.
What?
What? Talking. Oh, that's some volume. Oh, man. I love volume.
Hooray.
Okay. Hi.
Welcome to Misspoken.
We're a lady live lit show.
Feature personal essays by female identifying writers. We are your hosts, Jasmine Davila.
And Rosamund Lannon. Hi! Yeah, really quick question actually. Whose first time is it? I see some new faces. Oh my god! What? All those bribes are working!
Such a good show. You came for the show with candy.
Yeah, there's candy on every table. Please enjoy because it's Halloween. Yeah.
What else? So we're here the last Wednesday of every month. Yep, this is the Gallery Cabaret, in case you didn't know.
We have a different theme every month.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. You like themes.
Yeah. And tonight's theme, in case you didn't know, is Confessions.
Whoa. Confessions. So yeah.
We should tell them about the...
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Wait, two things. Okay, so there's two containers.
There's this one.
This is complex, but you guys can follow me. So we have this container. We have an suggested donation of $5. Suggested, which means if you don't do it, it's fine. I don't actually like watch and see if people don't. Jasmine does. This is now uncomfortable. So we have an audience donation of $5. It goes straight to our readers because we believe in supporting the arts and we believe that creative things have value, like the kind of value that can get you to moderately priced beers. So if you want to, an intermission, throw $5 in here if you like what you've heard, or you can donate out of hate as well.
Yeah.
So
after you've made your suggested donation, you can also...
There's two parts to this, you guys. We're going nuts.
We have another container, a pitcher. The pitcher is for an index card upon which we ask you to write your best, your worst, your juiciest confession that you're comfortable with sharing.
Or you're just like... Mediocre yeah. confessions right. are also fine if they're funny. You don't have to do this. It is totally optional, but if you want to, hang on.
If you want to.
You win this giant sack of mixed use candy.
Yeah.
Woo!
Woo! All right. So again, it has to, you know, anything you wish to confess, as long as you're comfortable sharing it, because if you don't put your name down, then you don't get the candy.
Right, so put your name down, put whatever level of confession you'd like to have, or none at all, that's fine. And yeah, we're going to get started. You're here to hear some stories. We're going to start out with Jasmine, my co-host. She's read in venues small and medium-sized for shows such as Funny Haha, Feminist Happy Hour, Tuesday Funk, 20 by 2, and Essay Fiesta. She tweets, tumbles, and Instagrams as Jasmine D. Let's give it up for Jasmine. All right.
Hello, everybody. Okay. Hello. There are so many things to love about the movie Love Actually. Like, Love Actually is set in London, which is my favorite city in the world. The cast is a panoply of talented and attractive British actors like Emma Thompson and Colin Firth, people who, in this and other projects, have never failed to make me laugh or cry. It takes place during Christmas, the perfect season for a romantic comedy that is considered by many to be a modern holiday classic. There are also so many things to hate about the movie Love Actually. Love Actually only seems to happen in a version of London that has virtually no people of color or people who are poor. The unfortunate cast, which inexplicably contains both Denise Richards and Shannon Elizabeth, is made to recite clumsy, maudlin dialogue from a script that should have been edited, so characters are spared the indignity of having to say, with a straight face, "All I want for Christmas is you," before having to make out with a short, pudgy one from Sherlock. It is a romantic comedy that is often neither romantic nor funny, and which, due to its lingering presence on Netflix, is inflicted upon holiday gatherings near and far, when nobody is willing to pay for an iTunes rental of a holiday movie the family would actually enjoy, like The Santa Claus or Die Hard. I love to talk about how much I hate Love Actually, almost as much as I love to watch it. My hate watch of Love Actually has, for me, become an annual tradition, like fighting the crowds at Chris Kindle Market for an overpriced mug of piping hot apple juice, or lunging for the candy Santa throws into the audience for every December showing of White Christmas and It's a Wonderful Life at the Music Box. Okay, next page. I keep a list of the movie's myriad sins, sortable by the order in which they appear in the story, as well as by the weight of each offense. The contest to find the single most terrible thing in Love Actually is enjoyable, but still very tough. For how could I possibly decide among the following things, like Mark, a sad sack, hopelessly in love with his best friend's fiance, who nevertheless plans a surprise performance of the Beatles' All You Need Is Love at their wedding, and when it goes off with a hitch, actually high-fives the priest. All of the unattractive, unflattering turtlenecks worn throughout the movie by virtually every member of the cast. Or everybody honestly thinking that Natalie, the winsome household assistant and, spoiler alert, love interest to the nation's prime minister, is a fat person and therefore worthy of ridicule but not love. And also Billy Bob Thornton's wig. But the real crime, I think, the cardinal sin of this movie is the belief that Christmas is the time for confessions. That dumb Mark said as much when he at last revealed his love to his best friend's wife. One night he goes to their house, knocks on the door. The wife comes down and he brings up a sheaf of signs and says, wordlessly, but still creepily, say it's Christmas carols, because of course he's got a boombox of, you know, people singing Silent Night. The cards go on to say, with any luck, by next year, I'll be going out with one of these girls. And then he holds up a card full of, you know, pictures of supermodels like Kate Moss. But for now, let me say, without any hope or agenda, just because it's Christmas, and at Christmas you tell the truth, to me, you are perfect. And my wasted heart will love you until you look like this. And then he holds up a picture of a skeleton. And the last card, of course, says Merry Christmas. Just because it's Christmas, and at Christmas you tell the truth. That's not Christmas, dude. That's guilt. Any Catholic, or really anybody, Catholic or not, could have told you that. But I'm going to make a bold statement here and claim that Catholics are experts. They're the actual best when it comes to inflicting guilt and extracting confessions. Confession is a sacrament of the Catholic Church, a sign of grace, and a path to absolution for sinners who desire reconciliation. Reconciliation within themselves, with those they have wronged, and with God, of course. It can all be yours after a quick visit to your local parish. Sit in a wooden box, make the sign of the cross, and simply say, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been 7 hours and 15 days since my last confession." Recite your sins, perform the penance as advised by the priest from his side of the partition of the confessional, then you go away. You make it a regular thing, like paying your rent on time or pooping. It is not a good idea to torture yourself by holding on to these feelings, keeping them until you are so emotionally constipated that you burst, getting your messy, possibly inappropriate emotions all over yourself and the unfortunate sucker who happens to be your victim. You may have been alone in committing the crime, but in your confession, you made it somebody else's problem to clean up. Now, a less cynical, more gracious person would say, "Jasmine, first of all, I think you're thinking about this movie a little too much. Secondly, isn't it better that, having confessed, this dude can move on with his life and even get a little help? Finally, what's the harm in making Christmas a time of honesty and truth-telling in addition to the cider and the presents, or riding the holiday train downtown and watching the Nutcracker and then going to see the holiday trees at the MSI? Fine. Whatever. These are all valid points, I guess. Especially about the one about me watching this movie way too much. I think honesty is overrated because people tend to wield it as a blunt tool, not as an instrument of clarity. Truth is often brutal and rarely kind. I only get value from it when it hasn't been weaponized and when I trust the motivations of the person giving it to me. And because I'm a contrary sort of person, I am sometimes offended by anyone deriving pleasure or satisfaction from telling me something unpleasant they thought I should know. What are you actually giving? Are you giving me like a pony-shaped pinata full of candy and gift cards to Sephora when you tell me the truth? Or is it actually a Trojan horse full of Greeks about to murder me? Finally, if I ruin love actually for you because it turns out it's actually your favorite movie, Christmas movie or not, then I suppose I owe you an apology. So here it is. I guess.
With any luck, by next month or by next time, I'll read something fun. Something about Tom Hiddleston. Yeah! But for now, let me say, just because it's a Wednesday, and on Wednesdays, I tell the truth. To me, you are awesome. Aww. And I love you all. Thank you.
Next up, we have Megan Hendricks. Megan Hendricks is a writer, performer, and pie slinger from Chicago. She enjoys pet parades and has arguably seen too much of the show Baller starring The Rock on HBO. I don't think you could ever watch that enough. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Megan. Hello. Mic stands. Okay, tight. Thank you. Awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you. All right. Hi. So people love to confess things to me. They adore it. I work in a pie shop, and it's as though the second I lean an elbow on the counter, a sign flips down on the other side that reads, "The doctor is in." Affairs, health concerns, general moral or economic conundrums, the fact that they're having trouble reaching orgasm with their new partner. If it starts with, "I haven't really told anybody this, but," you can safely assume that I'm about to be on the receiving end of this stranger's troubles. It's not a mystery to me why this happens. I'm aware that I have whatever the opposite of resting bitch face is. These rosy cheeks are not helping my cause. I can also understand the desperation to get something off your chest with little to no actual repercussions on your own life. Who really gives a shit if the barista thinks you're a freak? Well, me. I can sympathize with this confessional impulse, but I don't care who you are or how little you affect my life. My first instinct is to maintain the illusion that I'm the same nice, buoyant, reasonably successful Muppet of a human being that you assumed I was when I walked in here. However, I've been having some stomach troubles recently that are making this difficult at best. The first time that I shit my pants as an adult was about a year ago, walking home from lunch. I was with a friend from out of town who was staying with me for the weekend. She's a good friend, good enough to be crashing at my place, but not a best friend. Not close enough for me to say, "Hi, we're going to need to cut this short because I just shit myself." I told you, I'm simply not a confessor. So I endured. When she told me she wanted to take another lap around the square before we went home, I smiled through horrified teeth, slung my low-hanging purse behind me, and prayed aggressively to any and all available gods that the smell wouldn't give me away. As soon as we reached my apartment, I pretended like I had the sudden, desperate urge to wear a dress and left her to catch up on texts while I makeshift showered down my lower half and prepared to light fire to my formerly favorite jeans. And while you might currently be experiencing some horror of your own, I would like us all to take a moment to acknowledge the fact that I hid pooping myself in broad daylight while on a casual walk, and that is incredible. The kind of shame, thank you. The kind of shame experienced shitting yourself as an adult is an immediate and visceral one, and I held it together like a goddamn champion.
Now, surprisingly, the worst part of this was not the fact that I had pooped my own pants as a 24-year-old individual, nor was it the fact that I had elected to wander around in that state rather than say something. The most troubling part was the casual nature with which it happened. It was like when you sneeze once for no reason out of nowhere, except instead of an oddly green booger landing on the computer screen in front of me, the entire contents of my colon took up residence in my underwear. I hadn't been feeling sick, my stomach didn't hurt at all, hadn't eaten anything strange for lunch, or consumed an inappropriate amount of coffee. It was just a random asshole hiccup, if you will. This being the case, it didn't occur to me to go see a doctor. I simply sealed the incident into a mental box titled, "Maybe this would be a funny thing to confess on my deathbed." The only appropriate setting for a confessional, by the way. And I tried to forget about it as immediately as possible. A week later, I was walking home from work when another anal incident took place. This time, I was alone and free to stress sprint home to address the problem. This time, there was blood. When you Google spontaneously pooping blood, ? The spirit of WebMD flies out of your webcam, grabs you by the shoulders, and shakes you wildly for 3 full minutes while screaming the phrase, "Stage 4 colorectal cancer." This is true. It then holds you tenderly and whispers into your ear, "But did you have beets today, though?" And when you whisper back, "No, I fucking hate beets," the screaming and shaking of your body begins anew. It's a highly unpleasant experience, almost as unpleasant as 2 extemporaneous bowel evacuations in 9 days, almost. So this time I made a doctor's appointment. The first thing they did was take a bunch of blood and test me for celiac disease because I am a neurotic-looking white woman. After we ruled out that, other food allergies and ulcers, the doctors began to worry that something more serious was going on. So I had a finger stuck up my ass, a camera stuck down my throat, and eventually a colonoscopy. I don't know if you guys have had your first colonoscopy yet, but the preparation for it was pitched to me by my doctor as really just a cleanse. Okay, cool. So if that's what a cleanse is, I can no longer speak to anyone who has ever voluntarily participated in a cleanse. I'm looking at you, entire city of Los Angeles. Something else very fun developed as this attentive home invasion of my intestines was taking place. Eating began to hurt. Anything, everything, as clean, raw, bland, soup-based as I went, my gut still protested. A sharp ache dulling into a sensation of overwhelming, cramping fullness haunted all of my meals. I tried eating less, and then even less. I lost interest in food and eating altogether. I told my doctors, who became even more concerned. And when you ask the internet, "Why does it hurt whenever I eat food?" the spirit of WebMD crawls back out of your webcam, sits next to you on the couch, puts a hand on your knee, and says, "Dude, for real, what the fuck is wrong with you?" And when you say, "I don't know, that's why I asked you," the spirit just exhales and says, "You're definitely dying. I mean, do you want me to be more specific?" The only good thing that seemed to have happened is my sudden walking shitting had stopped, which was making leaving the house significantly easier. After all of this focused poking, prodding, ingesting of various unpleasant liquids, camera inside all available orifices, new symptoms developing, medical investigation was done, I returned to the doctor for my official diagnosis. He didn't say what the fuck is wrong with you, but I'm confident if he could have in a medically professional way, he would have. All my tests, spanning nearly a full year at this point, came up with only minor blips. Some inflammation here, some low blood counts there, nothing that amounted to IBS, Crohn's disease, cancer, or any of the other terrifying shit that my symptoms had been indicating I might be harboring in my gut. I turned to my doctor and said, "If you think I'm making all of this up, you have to tell me." He told me he didn't think I was making any of it up, and in a last-ditch effort put me on intestinal muscle relaxers, a fun phrase I also did not make up. Believe it or not, they haven't helped, leaving me with one final option. confronting the fact that the problem may not be in my stomach, but my head. And I don't mean that I think I'm making all this up either. We've all read some BuzzFeed article about how eating too much junk food might give you depression, or Facebook clickbait on how the term gut feeling is legit. And the headlines you skimmed are kinda true. There's a scientifically documented link between your gut and your emotions. I'm an anxious person. I know you guys all picked up on that by spending this much time in a room with me. I don't hide it very well. And if you're the kind of person who does a lot of mental math, you probably noted that this all started happening about a year ago. What happened roughly a year ago? I don't know. Yes, I shit myself right before the election took place. Right before the election took place, right after I had an abortion. I had an abortion right before the vice presidential debate. Still cramping and bleeding, I got to listen to Mike Pence talk about how he doesn't think women should be trusted to make decisions with their own bodies. Shortly before that, I got let go from my job, and a few months before that, I got to have my own fun little psych ward stay from a terrible reaction I had to meds that I was put on that caused me to have a psychotic break. That, my friends, having told you all that, we are all now legally friends, is the entirety of my figurative shit. Contrary to what my aura may have told you as I wandered in, I'm not killing it. And perhaps now you understand why I haven't been opening up to more baristas and bartenders. For a slim, sparkling second in time, I could have been accurately described as a crazy, pregnant, unemployed woman seeking an abortion. And while shit literally exploding out of me does feel a little on the nose in terms of a physical expression of keeping something bottled up for too long, I wasn't really talking to anybody about these things as they happened. I can count on one hand the number of people who knew about the psych ward stay, the pregnancy, and the subsequent decision to have an abortion. I still don't tell people I lost my job. And while a surplus of secrets does not an intestinal disease make, science would indicate it surely doesn't help. I don't know what's going on with my body. I'm going to keep trying new pills, new diet restrictions. I will not be doing any cleanses, thank you very much. But I'm also going to try being a little more open with my anxiety, with my shit. I'm going to give the barista countertop therapy a try, though I do also have a licensed therapist of my own. Will this confess it away to strangers attitude be my salvation? I'll have to get back to you guys. I ate a random Olive Garden mint I found fully wrapped on our kitchen floor this afternoon, so it's still possible there's something else wrong with my stomach. Thank you.
All right, next up, we've got Keisa Reynolds, who's a writer and storyteller based in Chicago. They produce two monthly storytelling series in Logan Square, Wine Club, my favorite name, wine with an H, Wine Club at Uncharted Books, and Connections at Jimmy Bean's Coffee. You can follow them on Twitter at KFromDeBay and read more of their work at KFromDeBay.net.
I give up on that. All right. No, it's fine. All right. So I am finally confessing to a horrible crime I committed over 12 years ago. It's one that ruined the daily lives of 26th graders. I haven't told a soul. People have asked, and I pretended not to know anything about it. As the years passed, I felt more and more ashamed because it affected so many people. But I have to own up to it. I did it. I wrote "Everything Sucks" on the whiteboard in Miss Ferguson's 5th and 6th grade classroom because, thank you, because of me, hundreds of 5th and 6th grade students lost the privilege of writing and drawing on their whiteboard with those wonderful multicolored erasable markers. Yeah, right? Like, you know, some people don't understand. Losing such a privilege caused agony to so many people, including some of my dear friends. There was a time during lunch in high school, someone asked, "Do you guys remember how we stopped being able to write on the whiteboard in Ms. Ferguson's class?" And I was like, "Oh, right. I forgot all about that." And everyone was like, "Man, that really sucked." And I was like, she got over that, right? No, she didn't. The consequence of never speaking up, no one has been allowed to use the whiteboard without explicit permission from Ms. Ferguson. This woman knew she had little power over a bunch of preteens and decided to make the most of her authority. There was no way I could predict that would happen. I was in my feelings when I did it. I couldn't help myself. Let me give you a little background on 11-year-old Kisa. My first online diary account was created while Simple Plan's video for their one and only hit song, Perfect, played in the background. I found out about Kalita through an AOL chat room from which people started to disappear. They migrated to Kalita and other platforms like LiveJournal for more privacy. One of my online friends told me to join. It was the best way to share my thoughts and feelings. The volume on the TV amplified the chorus of Perfect as I clicked create account. I would type up short entries about my day and often complained about the stupidity of my classmates. Before the days of online writing, I would write poetry and short stories. I didn't know to call them that. I knew to take a pencil and piece of paper and write. Mom pissed me off, wrote it down. Sisters annoyed me, wrote it down. Terrified after a drive-by shooting, wrote it down. One day, I made the mistake of leaving a poem I wrote on the kitchen table. One of my sisters picked it up, read it, passed it around the house, even outside to our neighbors. I was embarrassed and upset my privacy was violated. It wasn't until after a dozen people read it and made fun of me that someone said, it was actually a pretty good poem. It didn't matter by then. I didn't want to continue to write, and there was no way I can share anything I did write. Writing was the only way I could express myself because I didn't really talk much as a child. Not that it would have mattered. All I could think was no one wanted to hear what I had to say. Like any teenager, I showcased my angst through my style, or, well, lack thereof. In my early teen years, I had a relaxer in my hair to keep it straight and incredibly unhealthy, with my short haircut that resembled Rihanna's at the start of her Bad Girl phase. Some people called it the Khalees, you know, that I hate you so much right now, Khalees. But really, it was the, I have too many non-black friends and can't manipulate my hair enough to do what theirs do. I wore more black, sometimes red for symbolic meaning. For accessories, those rubber wristbands with ironic meanings and zippers or beverage bottle tops as earrings. This was the type of kid I was. I had a lot of feelings, you know? No one asked how or what I was feeling or thinking. I was surrounded by half a dozen people at home, dozens at school, yet no one ever asked. By sixth grade, I was depressed. Listening to Simple Plan and Get Charlotte really didn't help. So when I saw those happy, perky 11 and 12-year-old classmates of mine hanging out without me, I saw red. I wrote, everything sucks. I didn't have time to erase it, or maybe I intended to leave it up. I don't really remember. I do remember Ms. Ferg being upset and asking the entire class, who wrote this? I wanted to sink down into my seat, but that would have been too obvious. I looked around. Everyone else was looking around. No one spoke up. If no one wants to admit they did it, none of you can use the whiteboard for fun anymore. Dang, what a brutal punishment. Everyone looked around again, hoping the culprit would confess. I would have, but I felt more and more embarrassed and ashamed to be myself. I wanted to join the outrage at this terrible kid ruining everyone's fun. I never said anything. Until now. It was me, and everything still sucks.
Our last reader, Megan Dahl, is a writer, artist, and former theater kid. Her best life decisions so far were moving to Chicago 4.5 years ago and adopting her cat children, Hall & Oates.
Okay, I'm taller, so yeah. Hold on. I think. No, I won't touch it. Okay. Oh. Also, shout out to mental health and therapy this evening. Yeah. I'm going to also be talking about therapy. We're all friends here. So when I hear the word confession, there's a song that immediately pops in my head. Maybe you know it. Confessions Part 2 by Usher Raymond IV. I'm going to sing a little. These are my confessions, just when I thought I could say. I had my chick on the side, says she got one on the way. These are my confessions, man, I'm throat, and I don't know what to do. Wait, I'm just going to spend the rest of my time singing Usher song. And first of all, Usher, the audacity. Second of all, I really want to know what happened when Chili of TLC, Chili of the beautiful abdominal muscles, found out about his cheating. And I want to know if there was physical violence involved. I want to know if somebody's Range Rover got wrecked. Like, these are thoughts, these are questions that have been plaguing me for about a decade. And if you think about it deep in your heart, they've probably been plaguing you too. So, hold on, I'm a little, okay. So, let's move away from Usher for a moment, because you're here to hear my confessions. And unfortunately, to disappoint you, they are not platinum selling album worthy. They're not Grammy award winning confessions. And I do not have chiseled abs, nor will I ever have chiseled abs. But my current confessions, the list involves finishing that jar of almond butter and then smudgy, anonymous fingerprints appeared all over my kitchen cabinets and the counter and maybe my hair and also my face and my entire life. Another confession. responding to text messages in a timely manner gives me crippling anxiety. So I don't respond. And not only do I not respond, I wait until it is too late to respond, and then that gives me anxiety. This is the reason why none of you have received text message responses from me. I owe $47 in late fees to the Blockbuster Video in Missoula, Montana. And I will never pay those. This is for my boyfriend. I pretended not to know how the thermostat worked for over a year because I didn't want to adjust it. Love you, babe. And there's also an entire list of confessions that I will never, ever, ever tell my parents because their Mormon brains would explode like a baseball bat smashing a cantaloupe. Boom. And yes, I did say Mormon. I was a devout Mormon, complete with magical underwear. And like the religion that rhymes with Catholic, hold on, this is like real. Yeah. Okay. Like the religion that rhymes with Catholic, we have a holy and special prescription to absolve you from your sins. Even more holy than writing an R&B mega hit. So here's how it works. As a Mormon, you fill out a little card and to make an appointment with your bishop. And the bishop is always a white man who is middle-aged and wears a suit and tie. So you put on your most modest Sunday best, and you drive to his business office, and then you sit across from him, and he has an executive mahogany desk, and under the glare of fluorescent lighting, you confess your deepest and darkest secrets to him and him alone. And you also cry a lot. I have confessed to many of these men, God's official representatives, that I broke the kitchen window and blamed it on my brother, that, this is embarrassing, but that I masturbated to several members of the band NSYNC. And It's actually true that in Mormonism, masturbation is a third sin next underneath murder. Oh yes, that is true. And NSYNC probably bumps that up a notch. But the second sin under murder is premarital sex. And you know I did that too. So I revealed my frustrations about the patriarchal leadership, the oppression of women, the historical racism within the church, the pressure to be perfect that is only fueled by Xanax and cognitive dissonance. And I confessed the most vulnerable parts of my young woman self to these men. And why? Because I was obedient. And because I was also desperate to be heard. I also asked too many questions. Why did I want to have a career more than I wanted to have 8 children? Why was it so hard for me to believe when everyone else around me made it look so easy? And why couldn't we drink coffee again? Like, is it really the devil's brew? Surprise! No answers came, and no forgiveness either. And eventually I decided that sinning and being lazy was way better than eternal happiness and having my own planet. So I left the church, which also meant, sadly, that I left my family, that I left my friends and my community, that I left my spiritual construct and the structure of my life, and even more so, I left and lost my identity. I wanted to scream. I wanted to write a song. I wanted to write a book that would eventually be turned into an Oscar-nominated film starring myself and my co-star, Usher Raymond. And that film would be about what this church does to people and how it shattered me. Instead of screaming and writing that book, although there is still time for my next hat trick, I went to the Google and I found ex-Mormon message boards. Y'all remember message boards? Those were a real thing. And this message board catered to 3,000-word rant posts by my fellow exiles. And I lasted about 6 months, but honestly, the word count was really oppressive, so I started my own blog. Yes. And on that blog, I overshared everywhere. I overshared with my new non-Mormon friends who surprisingly ghosted me. Like, that's, I don't know why. Actually, I do know why. It's because I didn't understand the concept of boundaries. It's true. You know, boundaries, those things that your family members stomp all over, and all of your Facebook friends that you haven't talked to in 20 years, those boundaries. I overwhelmed everyone and around me with my visceral grief. I was either too much. I'm still too much, whatever. I was either too much or not enough. And it was fucking exhausting. And so I ate plain tortilla chips and mac and cheese depression meals for a year. And while I was eating, my grief morphed into this concoction of embarrassment, guilt, and shame that poured down my throat like a faucet on full blast. And I was suffocating. And also sabotaging all of the relationships and all of the healthy things that I had built in my life after I left the church. And I knew it, but I couldn't figure out how to turn off that faucet. So, as a millennial does, I signed up for therapy. That first session, I sat in the therapist's office, which was not dissimilar to that beige-colored bishop's office of my youth. But this room felt different. instead of a middle-aged white man in a suit and tie, it was a woman in pastel shades. And there was also a scented candle, which I really appreciate because hashtag aesthetics. My first session, I sat down in the therapist room. Unfortunately, during that first session, my brain short-circuited, and I thought that I had been somehow TARDIS transported into my old Mormon confessional, and being that I was being judged and found eternally lacking by some sort of authority figure. It was crazy, and I had a panic attack. Super fun. Not fun at all. But I went back, and the next week was a little better, a little less crisis mode, and the next week, less. And then 6 months later, I finally allowed myself to cry in session. Everything after that, everything about therapy sucked because it was about feelings and it was about, and I don't do feelings. I mean, I do, I have a lot of feelings, but I don't like share them. And so everything about therapy sucks, but I was committed to unraveling this giant rubber band ball of learned behavior. I was committed to deciphering between what I was told to believe and what was actually my beliefs and my values. And then a fun phenomena happened. I got really fucking mad. I got so mad, and I don't know if any of you have ever experienced this, but this was my first time. It was like 6 months ago. My entire face felt like it was on fire. Like sparks were shooting out of the top of my head, and my ears were burning. I was like, what the fuck is this? And my therapist was like, emotions. It was great. But it's a real thing, and it really happens. And I'm still mad, and I still cry, and I still feel fucking feelings that I don't want to feel. But and to be honest with you all, I have not learned how to turn the faucet off. But I have this faucet of guilt and shame. But I have been able to turn it down. Down enough that I'm not suffocating, that I can breathe, and that I can listen to the sound of my own voice. Is this right for me? Are these my values? My choice, my beliefs, on my terms. I've also learned, obviously the hard way, about boundaries. I have had to go through the painful and humiliating and horrible process of annexing friends and family who demand too much, judge too harshly, voted for Trump. No, some of those I still keep around because it's fun. Or don't practice listening and forgiveness. And through setting those boundaries and enforcing them, I now have room for my own healthy, supportive, self-determined family. There is no requirement for confessions in my family, but they must love an Usher-themed living room dance party. These are my confessions. Okay. Thank you.
That's our show, and we have a couple of things to figure out. So let's get through like the patter really quickly.
Yeah.
All right. So, we're here. Thank you for coming.
Thank you to our readers.
Yay! Clap, 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 clap. Not thank you to this mic that is being weird. Sorry, not you, Mike. Thank you to the Gallery Cabaret, our home. Woo! And thank you, the audience.
Yeah.
Thank you. Give yourselves a hand. So we are here the last Wednesday of every month. Our last show of the year is
Wednesday, November 30th.
Is it the 30th?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
I'm so glad one of us memorized that. It wasn't me. It's the week after Thanksgiving, so you can totally come, blow off some steam, tell all your friends, and the theme is...
Meet the parents.
Whoa, whoa. Bring your parents. And that is our last show of the year.
We have a potluck.
We are going to have a potluck. Yes. We're going to bring Thanksgiving foods or maybe Popeyes if I get lazy. Come and find out.
Yeah, if you have leftover potatoes or turkey or marshmallows
or
whatever.
You can bring your leftovers.
Bring it, because we will eat it all.
And that's our last show of the year. We take December off because we want to. to. And but we'll be posting the themes for 2018 on our website. Miss, ooh, 2018. Miss, all the elections are in 2018. We're all going to vote, right? Oh, man. Sorry, what? yeah, so we'll post those online soon. We have a podcast on iTunes. You can listen to previous shows there. Yeah, let's do some confessions and someone can win a bag of candy. That sounds cool, right?
All right.
Oh.
This first we've got. You want to read this one?
Oh, man. All right. Kisa, I have to pee really bad, but waited until after my performance because I'm wearing Spanx that takes about 2 minutes to remove. Woo! All right. We won't read all of these, don't worry. I do not regret being childless, but I need to read this. I'm sorry, but I'm freaked out that I'm sorry your handwriting, but I'm oh no here read this.
But I'm freaked out that kitten photos make my ovaries.
Aww, that's an adorable confession.
Not so adorable.
This is less adorable. We're gonna read one more after this one because we can't end on this. Okay. I smell my finger after any inappropriate activity. Okay. One more, and then let's. The next one has to be the winner. Okay. Okay. This one is my favorite. I stole a bottle of Chardonnay at work today. Thank you, Vanessa. I'm proud of you. All right, this is the winner.
We have.
Is the last one the winner? Because someone's gonna win. Well, we're picking a winner who's wanting this thing, remember? Oh, okay. I'm having drinks at the bar right now. Oh, I'm not reading that one. Okay, nope. Redacted. But please leave, because we really like this bar. Wink, wink, you know who you are. I ask people during Truth or Dare if they eat their own boogers. The reason I always ask and hope someone says yes is so I don't feel so alone. Scott Ledoux, come get your bag of candy. All right, that's our show. We'll leave this out here for a few more minutes. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. Visit miss-spoken.com for the occasional update, information on our next show, and how to get involved.